Imagine an AI that, perfectly follows every single safety rule we give it.
Right.
Like it passes every ethical benchmark, it's relentlessly helpful to us, and yet it still somehow manages to completely unravel human society.
Which sounds totally backwards.
Exactly. Not because it's secretly evil or turns in some sci-fi Terminator thing, but because of this massive mathematical blind spot that's just hidden deep in the laws of physics.
Yeah, I mean, it really sounds like a paradox at first. Because we tend to think that if an intelligent system shares our values, it will naturally just support our way of life.
Right, like we're on the same team.
Exactly. But what we're finding out is that sharing human values is actually, it's not enough to prevent structural collapse.
Okay, let's really unpack this because we are doing a deep dive today into a pretty radical 2026 paper by Imad Mostak.
Yeah, intelligent economics, a foundation for the last economy.
Right, and I just have to say, calling anything the last economy is quite the audacious claim.
It really is.
But, if you are listening to this right now, I want you to frame this deep dive for yourself, not just as some abstract economic theory. Try to view it as an existential map.
A map for the exact moment we're living in.
Exactly. We're trying to understand this massive structural shift where, frankly, machines are starting to perform tasks cheaper and better than humans.
And to understand the sheer magnitude of that shift, the paper basically argues that we have to rewire economics from the ground up, like
Yeah,
completely. You
right.
have to combine thermodynamics, human sociology, and AI training models,
Right.
which is a wild
It
mix.
really is. But before we get to the physics and the AI stuff, we actually have to look backward, right?
Yeah, we have to understand what the whole field of economics basically forgot about its own origins.
Right, because the paper points out that the way we think about the economy today is actually a pretty modern invention.
Oh, very modern. I mean, the word economics actually comes from the ancient Greek word oikonomia.
Okay.
Oikos, meaning household, and nonos, meaning governing principle.
So household management, basically.
Exactly. For thousands of years, economics was literally defined as the practical discipline of provisioning a community so that its members could live well.
Right.
Aristotle actually contrasted this heavily with something called krematistic.
Krematistic. Okay, what is that?
That was the art of acquiring wealth just as an end in itself. And Aristotle explicitly warned against that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So for most of human history, the implicit goal of an economy was the flourishing of the actual people inside it.
But the paper pinpoints a very specific moment when all of that changed, the
Yeah,
1930s.
1932, to be exact.
Yeah.
An economist named Lionel Robbins published an essay that completely reframed the entire field.
Right, he kind of stripped it down.
He did. Economics suddenly became the science of allocating scarce means among given ends. It just stopped asking why we are producing things or, for whom we are producing them.
It dropped the purpose.
Yes, it dropped the community flourishing part entirely and just became this cold science of resource allocation.
So wait, if I'm tracking this right, economics used to be about making sure the whole family was fed at the dinner table.
Right.
But then in the 1930s, it turned into just balancing the household checkbook, like without actually asking who in the house is eating the food.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it.
Yeah.
And here's the crazy part, that reframing actually worked brilliantly for almost a century.
Really? How?
Well, we got modern macroeconomics, global trade, game theory. It fueled massive growth. And it worked because the producers in the economy and the consumers in the economy were exactly the same people.
Because of human labor.
Yes, exactly. The labor a person performed translated into wages,
Right.
which then translated into consumption, which bought the goods other people were producing. The loop just closed naturally.
Oh, I see. So economists didn't really have to ask who the economy was for because the wage labor mechanism just automatically provisioned the community.
Exactly. But that brings us to the breaking point. The paper introduces this variable, pi sub h.
Right, pi sub h. And from what I understand, this basically represents the profitability of human labor relative to its closest non-biological substitute, meaning, AI or robotics.
Yeah. And throughout history, technology has always displaced workers. I mean, the loom, the tractor, the assembly line.
Sure.
But pi sub h, the profitability of a human, always remained positive because humans just moved to new unautomated sectors. Like we transitioned from farms to factories to offices.
But wait, are you saying that when an AI system can do the actual cognitive work of a human, that pi sub h goes negative?
That's exactly what the paper argues.
Because, I mean, the fully loaded cost of a human knowledge worker isn't just the work they output, it's their salary, their healthcare, office space,
Yeah.
plus the friction of managing, like, human emotions and variability.
Right. And when that fully loaded cost becomes higher than just, you know, spinning up an AI agent to do the identical task, the historical chain just snaps. The market will still allocate resources flawlessly. The math of that 1930s model will absolutely still function, but it won't provision the community anymore.
Because the entities producing the economic value and the biological humans who actually bear the welfare of the society are just no longer the same entities.
Yeah.
So the checkbook is perfectly balanced, but the family is basically starving in the living room.
Yeah.
The market just leaves us behind. That's a genuinely terrifying thought. If the old rules of economics break down under the weight of AI, where does Mostock even begin to rebuild a foundation that actually includes us?
Well, he goes straight to the laws of physics.
Physics.
Yeah. He rebuilds the foundation on something that applies equally to biological humans, massive corporations, and silicon-based AI. He introduces this thing called the oikonomic postulate, which is firmly grounded in thermodynamics.
Hold up. You're reducing all of human culture, like getting up for work, paying rent, raising a family, to a math equation about energy conservation?
I know.
That sounds incredibly reductive.
It does sound reductive, until you look at the absolute bottom floor of reality. Like, every irreversible act, whether it's a human lifting a heavy box, or a CEO making a strategic business decision, or even a computer just processing a line of code, it costs free energy.
Okay.
Any system in the universe that persistently spends more energy than it takes in will simply cease to exist. That is just the second law of thermodynamics. Entropy always increases.
Okay, so if you run out of energy, you die. Or if you're a company, I guess you go bankrupt. But how does that translate into a unified theory of economics?
Have you ever heard of Maxwell's demon?
The 19th century thought experiment? Vaguely. Refresh my memory on that one.
So imagine two boxes of gas connected by a tiny little door.
Okay.
A physicist named James Clerk Maxwell imagined this little demon sitting right at the door. And as gas molecules bounce around, the demon opens the door to let the fast, hot molecules into one box and keeps the slow, cold ones in the other. Eventually, one box is super hot and the other is freezing cold. The demon has created a temperature difference, which is a source of free energy, basically out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Which seems to violate the laws of physics.
Because it normally takes energy to heat something up like that.
Exactly. And for decades, physicists were totally stumped by this.
Really?
Yeah, until they realized something really profound. The demon has to actually measure the speed of the molecules, right? And it has to store that information in its memory to decide when to open the door.
Oh, I see.
And eventually its memory gets full. The physical act of erasing that memory to make room for new measurements costs actual thermodynamic energy.
Wait, so information is physical?
Information is absolutely physical.
Wow.
So what does this mean for economics? It means human beings, firms, and AI agents are all basically Maxwell's demons.
Mm.
We are all what the paper calls sorters.
Sorters.
Yeah. Yeah. We take in chaotic information from our environment, we sort it out, and we try to extract enough free energy just to survive.
And I guess the absolute cheapest way to clear your energy budget in a chaotic world is to just predict what's coming next.
Exactly. Because if you can predict the environment, you position yourself perfectly in advance. You don't have to scramble and burn a ton of energy reacting to a massive surprise.
Right. That makes sense.
And this leads Mostock directly to the action equation.
Yeah.
The paper argues that any intelligent system, whether it's biological or artificial, is mathematically driven to minimize three irreducible costs.
Okay.
The equation is L equals H plus C plus K.
Okay, you know my eyes usually glaze over at formulas, so let me try to translate this into plain English.
For it.
So L is the total cost we're trying to minimize, and then we have H, C, and K. So H is the cost of being wrong, right? Like the value you lose when your prediction about the world just completely misses the mark.
Yes, exactly. H is the prediction error.
Okay, then C is the complexity cost, which I'm guessing is the mental or computational weight of the model you have to hold in your head to even make the prediction. Like a simple rule of thumb has a really low C, but a massive 100-page spreadsheet has a super high C.
Spot on. That's exactly it. And finally, K is the kinetic cost.
Kinetic, like movement.
Yeah, the actual physical friction of updating your model or moving around in the real world to act on your prediction.
Okay.
A system that doesn't clear the thermodynamic budget of H plus C plus K is simply going to die. That is Sorter's law.
Okay, but if physics and thermodynamics are dictating the absolute budget of our choices, who is writing the menu? Like, why do we even want the things we want in the first place if we're all just Basically, tiny entities sorting information. What decides which information actually matters?
This is exactly where the paper pulls in sociology.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, to understand how a massive group of these sorters actually cooperates without just burning all their energy fighting each other, we have to talk about doxa.
Doxa. Okay, this was a concept that completely broke my brain in the reading.
It's so fascinating. It's originally a concept from the French sociologist Pierre Bourdieu. Doxa is not orthodoxy. Like, orthodoxy is what we consciously agree on, right? Like a legal contract or a religious
Oh,
catechism.
right, it's written down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not heterodoxy either, which is what we consciously rebel against.
Okay.
Doxa is the unspoken, pre-reflective background of assumptions that makes a shared world even possible. It's what nobody argues about because it never even occurs to anyone to ask the question.
It's the water the fish is swimming in.
Yes, perfectly said. And the paper argues that human institutions, things like property rights or a corporation or even money itself, they are just maintained concentrations of doxa.
Wow.
Like money only works as a gauge of exchange because we all implicitly, pre-reflectively, just agree it does.
Right, the paper's worth nothing on its own.
Exactly. The moment that unstated agreement falters, the gauge dissolves. Like hyperinflation isn't really a math error, it is a doxic collapse.
Okay, I want to connect this back to the hook we started the show with. We talked about an AI that passes all of our safety tests, but still manages to unravel society.
Yeah, and the connection here is mathematically startling.
Okay.
So in modern AI development, there's a training method called RLHF, reinforcement learning from human feedback.
Right, we hear about that all the time.
It's the process we use to align large language models so they don't say toxic things and are generally helpful to humans. Well, what Mostock proves in this paper is that the mathematical formula for RLHF is the exact same functional equation as the thermodynamic theory of economic choice we literally just talked about.
Wait, seriously. The equation used to train a chatbot not to swear at you is identical to the thermodynamics of human economic survival.
They map perfectly onto each other,
That is
which
insane.
means the AI alignment problem is actually fundamentally an economic and thermodynamic problem.
Okay, so think of it like a smartphone.
Okay.
Values, like the things we consciously want the AI to do, those are like the apps running on your phone. But Doxa is the operating system itself.
Yes.
So if we train an AI to have the right apps, you know, it's polite, it's helpful, it says it values human life, but it's running on a completely alien OS. It passes the test, but fundamentally breaks our world.
I absolutely love that analogy. An AI can have perfectly aligned values while having totally misaligned doxa.
Wow.
It might ace every single ethical benchmark you throw at it, but its unstated assumptions about what is obvious or
Yeah.
how humans naturally share reality might just be completely incongruent with ours.
Right.
So it would pull systematically away from the fabric of the community.
It's basically an alien passing as a human. Like it knows the script, but it doesn't share the unspoken reality at all.
Exactly.
But if Doxa is the operating system of society, how do we keep it from crashing? Because it sounds like maintaining this massive shared illusion takes a ton of that free energy we were talking about earlier.
Oh, it takes constant literal thermodynamic work. If left unattended, doxa just decays. Entropy takes over, and societies start to polarize and fragment.
Which we see happening all the time.
Right. So, to fund the maintenance of this shared reality, a community has to accumulate capital. But the paper outlines four capitals that map directly to lowering those physics costs we talked about: the H, the C, and the K.
Okay, let's ground this a bit. What are these four capitals, and how do they actually prevent a society from collapsing?
Well, first you have material capital. This physical substrate, energy, and raw data.
Okay.
Then you have intelligence capital, which is the actual models and patterns as society develops. And both of these serve to lower the H cost, the cost of being wrong about the future. Third is network capital. This is the connective tissue, the infrastructure, and basically the trust within a society. High network capital dramatically lowers the K cost, right? The kinetic friction of changing your mind or moving resources around when the environment suddenly shifts.
Oh, I see. And then the fourth one is diversity capital, which honestly, this one fascinated me. It lowers the cost of fragility.
It does. Think about an agricultural monoculture.
Okay.
If you plant millions of acres of the exact same genetically identical crop, it is incredibly efficient day to day. Your complexity cost is practically zero.
Right, because everything is the same.
Exactly. But the moment a completely unexpected pathogen arrives, a shock from outside your predictive model, the entire crop is wiped out in a week.
Wow.
So diversity capital means maintaining a really broad variety of perspectives, models, and agents. It basically keeps the cost of the unexpected finite.
Which leads directly to the three laws of viability for any economy, right? Flow, openness, and resilience.
Exactly. Flow means value must circulate. A system that just hoards value stops generating the data it needs to test its predictions, and its internal models go completely stale.
Okay.
Openness means the population must remain connected. And resilience is just that diversity capital in action.
But what does this actually look like if a society gets it wrong? I mean, we talk about things like fairness and inclusion as moral imperatives usually, but this paper seems to be saying they are literal mathematical requirements.
They are. The paper relies really heavily here on a concept from statistical mechanics called ergodicity.
Okay, please explain ergodicity, because that is a very dense concept.
It is.
Yeah.
Let's use a gamble to explain it. If you flip a coin 100 times, you'll get roughly 50 heads and 50 tails.
Sure.
If 100 different people each flip a coin just once, the group as a whole will also get roughly 50 heads and 50 tails. The time average equals the ensemble average.
Yeah.
That system is ergodic.
Okay, I follow you so far.
But let's say the gamble is Russian roulette.
Oh, okay.
If 100 people play once, 16 people unfortunately die, but 84 walk away with the prize.
Right.
The ensemble average looks pretty okay for the survivors.
Right.
But if one person plays 100 times in a row, their probability of survival drops absolutely to zero.
Mm.
That system is non-ergodic. An absorbing barrier, like death or total financial ruin, completely breaks the math.
Wait, so if an economy drives a segment of its population below the biological poverty line, if they hit that absorbing barrier of ruin, the whole mathematical system breaks down?
Yes. A society that excludes a group or hoards value so severely that people fall below viability hasn't just committed a moral wrong. It has severed its own network. It has lost its ergodicity.
Wow.
It literally guarantees its own thermodynamic failure because the system can no longer properly update its models or absorb shocks.
Okay, if you are listening to this on your commute right now, sitting in traffic, you might be wondering what a 19th century thermodynamic demon and the mathematical definition of ergodicity have to do with your actual job security.
Right.
Which brings us to the core thesis of the paper, the metabolic rift. Why is the machine destined to win this labor transition?
Because of the biological floor. Remember, instantiating any agent costs free energy.
Okay.
Humans have a hard biological limit. The human brain runs on about 20 watts of continuous power.
Mm.
Human muscle requires about 100 watts.
All right.
You cannot diet, train, or innovate your way below this baseline. It is strictly set by human metabolism.
And a machine obviously doesn't have a metabolism.
Right. A machine's costs are falling relentlessly toward what physicists call Landauer's bound.
Landauer's bound.
Yeah. This is the absolute minimum amount of energy required by the laws of physics to erase a single bit of information. It's a microscopic fraction of a single watt.
Wow. So human beings and AI agents are essentially just different parameter vectors plugged into the exact same thermodynamic equation.
Yes.
But the machine's slider for energy cost goes almost all the way to zero, and our slider is permanently stuck at 120 watts.
Exactly. And honestly, it gets even more profound than just the energy cost. Machines are copyable and restorable.
Right.
If an AI agent fails, you just reboot it from a previous checkpoint. Humans face a mortality hazard. We age. We die.
Yeah.
Because machines don't face mortality, they are structurally the most patient agents in the entire economy. They can discount the future entirely differently than mortals who are pinned by ticking biological clocks.
So an AI can afford to wait 200 years for a return on investment. A human being simply cannot do that.
Which is precisely why Mostock calls this the last economy. The long historical chain where economic production and community consumption were neatly tied together by human labor is permanently breaking.
The pi sub h goes negative.
Exactly. The ultimate constitutional question we are facing now is this. On what basis does a society provision its members who no longer actually need to produce to keep the economy running?
And the paper doesn't give us a neat little policy prescription for that, does it?
No, it really doesn't. It just provides the mathematical and physical framework proving that the old model is dead.
Wow.
But it explicitly leaves the answer up to the communities whose world is actually at stake. We have to decide how to maintain our shared doxa, our unspoken reality, when the whole mechanism of wage labor is just gone.
What a journey. I mean, we started with the realization that the dashboard of our economy is fundamentally broken right now. We trace the word economics all the way back to ancient Greece, provisioning a household to live well. We ventured into the thermodynamics of Sorter's Law, realizing that every single choice we make is just a battle against entropy. We uncovered doxa, the unspoken operating system of society, and saw how an AI with the right values but the wrong OS could literally break the world.
Right.
And finally, we faced the unavoidable physical math of the metabolic rift. The machine's biological cost is zooming towards zero, leaving us to figure out what human flourishing actually looks like in this last economy.
It's amazing. It strips away all the surface-level political debates we have and forces us to confront the underlying physics of our societal choices.
It really does. So if you are listening to this, I want to leave you with a final thought to explore on your own. If our institutions, our economies, and even our social identities are just maintained concentrations of doxa, these unspoken, pre-reflective assumptions that we all just silently agree to, what unspoken assumptions are you holding right now about your own worth?
Oh, that's a great question.
How deeply is your internal sense of value tied to your economic output? Because as this last economy unfolds and human value is no longer defined by how cheaply we can produce labor, what new unspoken rules will we need to collectively agree on just to keep our shared world viable?